Running the Race to Win the Prize. That's the title of this morning. I think we are all, whether you like it or not, we're all in a race. It's a race to achieve a goal. That's what races are about, isn't it? Or a race simply to live. It started when we were born, and it will carry on until we die. We're all in a race. For some, it's like a rat race. Feels completely pointless. Running around, feeling a bit like a rat, doing bits and bobs. For some, it's a me race. It's all about me, what I can do, what I can get for myself, how many goals I can achieve for me so that I can live a better life. Sort of a bit selfish, that. For some, it's a keeping up with others race. I'm looking at all the guys around me and seeing them doing so well, so I want to make sure I'm as good as them. Or I see what they've got and I want it. Or maybe I've got some peers, that people that I need to keep up with. That's really about appearances. Yet for some, it's a race for the sake of others. It's a race with a real eternal prize at the end of it. So I'm going to ask you, what race are you in? What race have you entered yourself for this year? And I want to talk about the race for the sake of others. But in doing that, I'll probably touch on these other races that I talked about as well. But first I want to read to you a bit in the Bible that inspired me to talk about this race. Catherine, you could, while I read this, if you could cue the music, because I've got some music. Hopefully it will work. This is me desperately trying to be multimedia. This comes from 1 Corinthians 9. It says this. That's good, inspiring music. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we to receive something imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after heralding the gospel to others, I should be disqualified. Now, I realise it's still going on, so I'm going to read to you it in a different version. Okay, now? Don't you realise that in a race, everyone runs, but only one person gets the prize? So run to win. All athletes are disciplined in their training. They do it to win a prize that will fade away. Yet we do it for an eternal prize. So I run with purpose in every step. I'm not just shadow boxing. I discipline my body like an athlete, training it to do what it should. Otherwise I fear that after preaching the gospel to others, I myself be disqualified. And obviously I thought I'd be a nice thing. All that evokes, doesn't it? All those sorts of race type things. So anyway, so that's the end of the multimedia, I'm afraid. Maybe we'll get better as the year progresses, but you know, that's as far as we got today. So, if you want to refer to your Bibles, by the way, we're from 1 Corinthians 9, and the verses that I'm really sort of focusing on are 24 to 27. And Paul is really talking about here is, he's saying that the life of a Christian, he's talking about the life of a Christian and how it should be lived, and he compares it to a race. Every race has a purpose, and the purpose is to win, to obtain a prize or achieve the goal. And in the same way, he's saying the Christian life is about achieving a prize, achieving a goal, an eternal one that will last forever. Our eternal life in heaven with Christ. Someone, theologian called N.T. Wright, put it like this. And this is good theologian language that I don't really understand, but I'll just say it to you, just in case you do. Okay? Living in the present as someone who will inherit that incorruptible, deathless new body when God makes the whole world new. So, that's, I hope that helps somebody. Anyway, so it's really about that. It's about living now for the future. Living now for the future and what is to come, and living in that perspective. But I think it's more than what he said, and we'll get to this as well. It's also about the prize, not only for us, but the prize of seeing others in heaven too. The prize of actually seeing others, because that's as much a goal for us, isn't it, as our own salvation, seeing the salvation of others. Running our lives for the sake of others. And the point really Paul is making through this, and the point really I want to make, is that we should live our lives, or in, you know, using the same sort of example that he's using, run the race in order to win. That's what it's about, running the race in order to achieve the prize, to get the prize. Okay. And unfortunately, he says that's about training and self-control. Everyone gives a bit of a groan. The athlete Paul was talking about in this, probably from the Isthmian Games or something like that, they went into really huge training. They would give up all bad food. They'd give up all wine. They'd give up sex too. And they'd enter into a punishing training regime in order to win the prize. And sometimes that even included physical, the trainer actually sort of physically beating them in order for them to sort of get really hardened up and toughened up for the race. It's quite an amazing sort of training regime, you'd imagine. I mean, I was even wondering, sometimes they break people's ankles and stuff like that. I can't really imagine them doing that. I think someone was maybe exaggerating at that point. And the amazing thing is that they do all this. And if you can't picture that, just picture, you know, all those Olympic athletes now that are training for 2012. They're already going through strict discipline and training for one event to achieve a gold medal. Swimmers, for example, getting up at 5 o'clock every day to swim for a few hours, so that in a year's time, in 2 years' time, they'll be fit enough, ready enough to do that. Amazingly, they do all this, Paul's saying, for a bit of foliage. That's what a wreath is. It's just like a laurel wreath that would be placed on their head to say, you're the champion. They do all that for a bit of foliage. Yet for us, our Christian race, for which the prize, which is so much greater and so much more longer lasting, shouldn't we too devote our lives and train hard and get disciplined? If they can do all this for a bit of foliage, surely we can get motivated, seriously motivated, or motivated to get serious for an eternal prize. I'll just leave that question hanging. In England, we love the underdog, don't we? The plucky amateur. Could you remember good old Eddie the Eagle? Remember him, the guy who entered into some sort of Olympic skiing championship, wasn't it? It was like the ski jump a few years back. Had no training, had no clue, but we loved him, even though he came last. We loved him because that was the essence of Britishness. It's the essence of us, isn't it? It's what we love. We love this. We love the fact, you know, the plucky amateur who has no clue, no training, no hope of winning. He comes last. And we loved him for that, didn't we? It was actually, he became a celebrity. He became the champion, the hero of everything that... If you don't know, I mean, I know Eddie's quite a long time ago, so you might not... Some of you might be going, what am I talking about? Just type in Eddie the Eagle in internet and you'll find out. Sorry? Yeah. So he's in there. So you see, he's very... I'm being very... He's in the Churchill advert, so you see I'm being very, very topical, even though I don't even realise it. Now, Prof. Paul, in this example, would call Eddie the person who runs aimlessly and boxes as one beating the air. It's fun, it's a bit cool. We can say, well, I'm just going to leave it to God and let him work through me and do miracles, but do we really want to be Eddie the Eagle Christians? End up at the end of our lives reflecting on having fun, but being completely ineffective and winning nothing or no one, having completely unfruitful lives. With grace and forgiveness, which we've already talked about earlier in the worship and stuff like that, we could be like that. God gives us that option. He's that wonderful, he's that forgiving, that he gives us that option. But his plan wasn't so that we could be Eddies, Eddie Christians. His plan was, instead, it's about strict self-control, running straight to a goal with purpose, disciplining our bodies to do what they should. At this point, I imagine some of you are already beginning to think, hey Jonathan, are you ditching grace this year? And preaching legalism? Are you preaching it's all about what we do? Well, I would be if I was saying that the motivation for doing it was for us, for ourselves. Because that's what legalism is. It's saying, I'm going to obey a set of rules so that God will like me more. So that it will benefit me. What I'm talking about is giving up our rights and freedoms in order to become the person God wants us to. We do that because we are free and we choose to serve rather than out of a sense of slavery or fear of God. Jesus once said this. He said, greater love hath no man than he that lays down his life for his friends. He was referring to himself, but he was also referring to what he expected of us too, as Christians, that we would lay down our lives for the sake of our friends, for the sake of people we know. See, the treasure of this gospel, this treasure we found, is so precious that we should be willing to do anything to get others to see it. And also, as well, ensure that we don't lose the whole of it too. Okay, so, I could end there, but actually, there's an important sort of explain a bit further and round out what I've been saying. I want to look at the context of actually what Paul was actually saying around this verse, these verses, because that's quite important. And it'll help us really fully understand what Paul was getting at, and also make sure we don't sort of get diverted onto a little side shoot or misunderstand what he was saying. If we go back to chapter 8, Paul addresses the question that was in the church that he was writing to. The question was to eat or not to eat food sacrificed to idols. Some people were able to intellectualize in the church, were able to say, yep, that's okay. We can do that. We can do that under grace. We can do that. Anything is permissible to us. But others just couldn't get past this. They said, but this food has been sacrificed to idols. How can we eat this? And they just couldn't get past that. And their consciences were saying, no, we can't eat it. And there was this sort of contentions going on. And this was causing friction between various bits in the church. And Paul, in verse 1 of chapter 8, says this. He says, while knowledge may make us feel important, it's love that really builds up the church. The person who loves God is the one God cares for. And that's really the crux of what he's saying, which he later goes on to explain as he talks about this thing. That actually, okay, yeah, you know, everything's permissible, you could do this, but for the sake of others in your midst, don't. Give up some of your freedom so that others Don't get so that others don't stumble and fall. Paul then uses a personal example. So I'm just basically summarising all the verses around the context rather than reading it out, because it'll take, it's easier for me to summarise and you'll get the gist better than if I was to just read it to you. Paul then uses a personal example. He says he has the right to be paid as an apostle for teaching and for caring for them, but he chooses not to forgo this for their sake and because God has called him to preach. And the call on his life to preach is so strong that he would do it anyway, whether they pay him or not. He then uses another example where he talks about gaining people's confidence and bringing them to Christ. To do that, he will be a Jew amongst Jews, and he will be a Gentile amongst Gentiles. So basically what he's saying there is, he's saying, when I'm in Jewish company, I'll be like a Jew. I'll fulfil all the customs, all the stuff that they deal with, so that they will have confidence in what I'm saying. When I'm a Gentile, I won't try and impose all the Jewish stuff on them, but as far as I can, I will behave like them, fit into their culture, so that then they will have confidence in me too. Now, having what he's saying there is, I have the freedom. Our grace in Christ means that we have the freedom to do anything. But I will behave in a certain way to reach certain people. And he's then relating that back to their situation about this food, idol food things. Okay, is that all making sort of sense in a... I can tell you all your minds are sort of just about holding on. So can you see there's already a pattern emerging from what he's saying? Not doing something I can do for the sake of others. Living my life for the sake of others, that they will get the gospel. But there's also then, he then... So that's before what we read. Then he makes that statement that we've read and we focused on. And then, but he also says stuff afterwards, which is important too. He then talks about an example from Israel, where despite all that God did for them, all the miracles that he did for them to get them out of Egypt, all the stuff they did, all the stuff he did for them, at the end of it, they still wanted idols, craved evil, and indulged in sexual immorality. And what he's saying is, we need to learn from their example and respond to what God has done for us, the miracle that he's done for us through Jesus, differently to the way Israel responded to it. In other words, not abusing our freedom doing selfish stuff which is not beneficial and right or helpful. And he says this in chapter 10, verse 23. I'm allowed to do anything, but anything is not helpful. I'm allowed to do anything, but anything is beneficial. Sorry, did I say that right the first time? So I'll say that again, because there's lots of anythings in there that I might get confused. So, I am allowed to do anything, but not anything is helpful. I'm allowed to do anything, but not anything is beneficial. Don't think only of your own good, think of other Christians and what is best for them. So instead of doing what we want, it's about using our freedom to win others to Christ and to do what is best for other people in our group, in our midst, in our Christian group. And he finishes by saying, this is in chapter 11, this is like the end of this whole bit from chapter 8 to chapter 11. This is the sort of end of that whole bit, because Paul tends to talk in big, long chunks that are sort of can be quite sort of difficult to get hold of, but you sort of have to read the whole thing, and then from that you get what he means. He finishes by saying this, and you should follow my example just as I follow Christ's. So what example exactly? Well, Jesus could have done anything while he was here. He was the Son of God. He had complete free reign to do anything. You know, he's God. But his life is characterized by two things. I'm just going to bring two things about his life. Firstly, he ate and drank with sinners. He identified with them. He ate and drank with them. He spent time with them. But also, he had a really disciplined spiritual life. We see him praying and fasting, often getting up early, often staying up late to do that. And he was not bothered with material things. He didn't own anything. Can you see the two contrasts there? That he was, you know, that he was spending time with all these guys that needed God, but yet he was also making sure that he had a disciplined spiritual life. We see Paul doing the same thing. He never served himself, always served others and the cause of the gospel, and was often in terrible situations, yet when the gospel required, he would be a Jew or Gentile. He would be whoever he needed to be to make the message happen. So can you see those two things working together? I'll explain it. So I would say that it's like the discipline that was in their lives that made them so effective at reaching out and serving others. They needed those two things in their lives. As you can imagine, if Paul or if we just spend lots of time with non-Christians and we just behave like them, and we sort of all our lives is encompassed in that sort of arena, that it will be very difficult for us to stay close to God, because we'll just be drawn away into that world. However, alternatively, if we just spend all our time praying, fasting, doing these spiritual disciplines, we'll end up being monks and nuns, and we'll have to be so separate, you know, it'll just be one or the other. But what God is saying, what Paul is saying here, is that actually his example is that you do both, and actually one helps you do the other. So we need the undergirding of our spiritual disciplines to secure it, that all that that brings into our lives, so that we can then spend time in the world and not be affected by it and be a witness in it. Do you see how those work together? And what Paul is really saying here is that basically by doing this, he's pursuing this goal. So it says in the verse that I read, that he runs, and this is that, so I run with purpose in every step. Purposefully, there's a purpose in everything that he's doing. Made a decision motivated by love for the lives of others, was so precious to them that they were prepared to put to death all their selfish desires and cravings to help them. So how can this play out with us? I've already hinted at a few things, but I'll just try and sort of undergird that in the time that we've got left, or the time we haven't got left. We probably all want to see our friends and family and neighbours saved. That's a good general aim, isn't it? Good general aim. As a church, we aim to impact Aylesbury, to see people saved, to see people impacted with the gospel. But what we now need to do is back up that general aim with specific training, self-discipline and targeted actions. We need to do that, or it will just remain a general aim that will never actually get anywhere. We need to walk purposefully with every step to reach the goal of what we want to do. We found this a bit on Thursday, didn't we? When we were looking at that wonderful passage in Colossians, that just as Christ, we're following in Christ's footsteps, being the visible representation of the invisible God to all us around us. And that requires purpose and patterns in us. So how can we become more effective at being this? Well, I would say, firstly, this. We need to make sure that we have this... we've put in place in our lives regular spiritual disciplines that will give us strength and purpose, and a foundation that we can then, from that, branch out and reach out to others. So that means spending regular, purposeful times with God, both on our own and with others, so that we are full of God and know with confidence his purpose for us. This means that when we encounter people that don't know him, we will have a reservoir of stuff in us that we can give to them. We'll have a reservoir. We'll I think we talked about this on Thursday as well. That, oh, if only God was more real. If only God was more real. If only we could really grasp hold of what this little bit of the Bible was saying about God, and get excited about that. Wouldn't that make such a difference in our lives? Well, a big part of how to do that is actually to regularly spend time with God, spend time in the Word, getting those disciplines in our lives. You may say, well, isn't that a bit legalistic? No, it isn't. It's about us being motivated and putting things in place for the sake of others. Don't call eating food legalistic, do we? Yet we eat it at regular times, and we know that's good for us. It's the same with this. And we need to get... Sometimes we can get so... hopefully I'll explain this the right way. So sometimes we can get so worried that we're living outside of grace that we can then not realise that actually we do need to see disciplines in our lives and actually see and actually make sure that we've incorporated these things in our lives. Okay, so I need to go on to the next page, or I'll just preach what I just preached to you to. You'll go back to what it was. And so. Right, okay. So that's the first thing, okay? Putting into our lives these spiritual disciplines, praying, reading the Bible, all that stuff that we all know, and yet we find so hard to do. But this year's a new year, good time to try and start things out afresh. Secondly, I think, is changing our schedules, changing our agendas in our lives to purposely hit the goal God has placed before us. Now, you may have a specific calling or goal that you feel that God has placed on your heart. You need to think, okay, if I've got that specific calling, what am I putting in? How is my agenda shaped by that goal? How is my life shaped by that goal? You may, as part of this church, we as part of this church, have certain agendas, goals, or callings that God has placed on us. We need to think about, collectively, how are we letting our agenda, individually and as a group, collectively, how are those shaping what we're doing? Okay, I'm just going to just say an example, because I'm conscious of the time. I'm just going to say one example. There's quite a few. An example for us as a church would be waffle. Okay, which has become really, I suppose, in essence, obviously you can disagree with me if you think differently, but in essence, a call from God to help lonely people find community, and through that community find God. That's really, in essence, really what it is, and there's lots of other things to it as well. If we feel that God's calling us as individuals and as a church to do that, we should run straight to that goal with purpose. Even this week, I had someone calling me on the phone from the library. I don't know where they found waffle in the library, wanting to know about waffle. And then they said, I'm lonely. Is there people that I can meet? So how can we change our schedules, or how can we make sure our schedules work so that this waffle thing, which we believe God has placed a calling in our lives, how can we make sure that that really makes a difference? Well, here's a few ideas. Make time in our lives to develop community amongst us so that actually we're connected together in a way that means that people will see some difference in us. They'll see that community that they can join. I know, I'm not saying, by the way, just a bit of a health warning, I'm not saying that we're not doing this, okay? So don't get to me, oh, Jonathan said, we haven't got the community, Jonathan, blah, blah, blah. No, I'm not saying that, I'm just emphasising, okay, so don't get into condemnation here, or think I'm saying, I think we've got no community. I'm not saying that, okay, I'm just saying, you know, we can always do more. Because I know how minds work sometimes, okay, you always tend to sort of put a different spin on things. I know someone once said to me, you can say so many words a minute, but actually you can think about 200 words a minute more than that. So by the end of today, you will not only hear what I hear, you'll hear probably about 75% more of what you're actually thinking that I'm saying. Okay, so you get used to that, and then you always get used to that, and then somebody says, "But you said this, blah blah," and I said, "No, I didn't." No, you sort of get that anyway. Okay, so make time to in our lives to let community amongst us. Also, another thing, we can make sure that our community is open enough so that others can be a part of it, so that it's open, so that others can feel that they can join it. And maybe as well, when Waffle happens itself, be open not just to turning up and having a breakfast, but being open enough to make friends, maybe with just one person that we get on with, so that then we can draw them in to what our community is about. Maybe, or even if it's, or even if you just sense, go into Waffle thinking, "Well, Spirit, just you know, if there's anyone in particular you want me to speak to, if there's anyone in particular you want me to converse with, if there's anyone in particular you want me to befriend, just show me." Okay. So, there's lots of other examples I could give, but time has gone. Okay? That's just one calling we have. I know you're all thinking, "What are all the other callings?" Well, you know, you can work them out. We can talk through those maybe on Thursday or whatever. So, just in summary, this year, let's seek God, be clear at what he's calling us to do, put in place that horrible word disciplines in our life, so that we can be as full of the Spirit as possible and be intentional about reaching those goals. Running straight to the goal with purpose in every step. Backing up these general goals that often we have as churches with specific targeted actions. I believe if we do that, we will win the prize that we're all seeking, which is people saved. Isn't it? We want to see this place full of people, not just Christians coming, but actually people that at the moment aren't Christians.